content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, the July and August edition, 2019. On the cover of this edition is Iman, and we have not yet gone over her story, so if we don't go over it in this month, July, we'll surely go over it in August, since this edition is for both July and August. So first thing first, let's go over issues. 10 things that we're currently talking about. Number one, Agent for Change. Common is probably best known for his conscious rhymes and melodic flow, but his passion for activism cannot be denied. In May, the Grammy Award-winning artist, actor, and philanthropist signed on as an ambassador for Global Citizen, an organization and movement of committed activists working to dismantle systematic causes of extreme poverty. In this role, the author of Let Love Have the Last Word, which is his second book, advocates for the elimination of the cash bail system, which leaves thousands of people awaiting trial behind bars simply because they don't have money to be released. Quote, I want to help the people who are oppressed because of their skin, beliefs, and economics. End quote, Common said following the announcement of the partnership. I'm always in a fight for that. Number two of some of the trending topics that we're talking about is exploring expressions of depression in single black mothers. A newly study led by Rutgers University Camden nursing professor Rashida Atkins suggests that clinical depression in this group should not be diagnosed using the same criteria as non-blacks. The research indicates that single black women's are often triggered by stressors related to housing, poverty, parenting, and the lack of quality health care. Number three, Black Chefs Rising. Brian Furman is the owner of Bee's Cracklin' Barbecue in Atlanta and Savannah, and James Beard Award winner Kwame Onwuachu, the executive chef of D.C.'s Kith Kin, are among Food and Wine's best new chefs of 2019. The two standouts were chosen for the Culinary Publication's 31st class of talented cooks. Currently, African Americans account for only 12.5% of the nation's chefs and head cooks. Number four, The More You Know. Delaware State University is making a large investment in Black history. The HBCU recently announced the establishment of the Center for Global Africa, which has a mission to educate the descendants of enslaved people about their roots on the continent and their journey to America. The center will also foster a present-day bond between African Americans and their place of ethnic origin. Number five. Balancing the scales. On the heels of the First Step Act, the country's most sweeping criminal justice reform law in decades, there is a new report by the Bureau of Justice Statistics and Data confirming that there has been a steady decline in the prison population in the United States. The shift is well represented by the imprisonment rate of Black women. From 2000 to 2017, those numbers have decreased by 55%. Number six, quote, when I say opportunity, I'm talking about real opportunity. Opportunity to dig into one's own potential, one's own inclinations, talents, and God-given gifts, and bring out the best of what is in them, end quote. And that quote was by Vivian Nixon. She's the Executive Director of College and Community Fellowship. She was discussing the path forward for formerly incarcerated women of color. Number 7, the Civil War is often summarized as the North versus the South, but the team behind the newly opened American Civil War Museum in Richmond, Virginia, once the capital of the Confederacy, aims to change that. Historian Christy Coleman is creating a nuanced portrayal of the war that includes the stories of known and unknown women and African Americans, among the others. Number 8, addressing obstacles. The enrollment forms at D.C. public schools look a little different this year, thanks to the efforts of the community activist and author Tony Lewis Jr. The forms now include an option to report traumatic issues a child may be dealing with at home, such as the incarceration of a parent, homelessness, or death. The update is geared toward helping educators understand how to better support their students. Number 9, a pipeline for greatness. Senator Kamala Harris wants to secure a bright future for young women and marginalized groups. In May of 2020, presidential hopeful introduced the 21st Century STEM for Girls and Underrepresented Minorities Act. If passed, it would allow $40 million in grants to go to school districts to improve participation in STEM education for girls, students of color, LGBTQ and disabled students, and disadvantaged youth. And number 10, what about us? Working Mother magazine's newest study on diversity in the workplace proves that there is a long way to go in achieving parity for African American and Latina women. The findings in Best 2019 Companies for Multicultural Women reveal that both groups didn't make any gains in attaining leadership roles at the country's top firms in 2018, although their participation in leadership programs has increased. And those are the trending topics of July and August of 2019. Continuing on with issues, change agents, she, the people. These women are breaking barriers in the respective arenas and making sure their voices are being heard. On Super Bowl Sunday this year, one commercial in particular caught viewers' attention. It was a Toyota ad that featured Antoinette Tony Harris. She's a 23-year-old who has played football since she was a little girl and wants to be the first woman to play in the National Football League, also known as the NFL. Since the airing of the ad, the Detroit native is one step closer to her goal. Harris, who was a safety at East Los Angeles College, recently announced she was signing with Central Methodist University's football team in Fayette, Missouri, making her the first woman at a skill position to sign a letter of intent to play college football on a scholarship. Since then, her life has been a whirlwind of interviews, television appearances, and more interviews. But Harris, who was diagnosed with cancer in 2014 and went into remission a year later, is tough and ready to handle anything thrown at her, including tackles. Like so many football players, Harris discovered her love of the sport at a young age. "I used to watch my cousin play," she says. "At first, I was into track and field, but I could see the passion everybody had for the game, and I wanted to be part of that, so I picked up football, and I never put it down." Initially, her family was hesitant about her playing the sport, but once they saw her commitment, they came around to supporting her fully. They still worry about her safety. A 2018 Boston University study found that an astounding 94% of players surveyed who played in college or the NFL had been diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, encephalopathy also known as CTE. I don't think I pronounced it correctly, but it's also pronounced as CTE. It's the term that most use. It's a degenerative brain disease caused by repeated head injuries. Among college players who did not go on to play professionally, CTE was diagnosed in 86% of those studied. Unfortunately, CTE can only be diagnosed after a person dies. Despite the dire statistics, Harris isn't overly concerned by the possibility of getting hurt. I haven't had any serious injuries in football other than maybe a tennis elbow, she says. I mean, you worry about CTE, but if you let your fears determine how you play on the field, then maybe you shouldn't be playing, because that's typically when you get hurt. The key, she adds, is to play and have fun while taking all the necessary safety measures to reduce the chance of injury. Now, as Harris embarks on the upcoming college football season, she also has her sight set on playing for the NFL's Seattle Seahawks. I try to speak to girls who have an interest in football to keep them motivated and playing the game, Harris says. I tell them that no matter what, keep your head held high and don't let anyone kill your dream. Fighting environmental racism. Shannon Rainey thought she was living the dream when she became the owner of her first home in New Orleans, Upper Ninth Ward. But after Rainey discovered a biohazard waste container in her yard, that dream turned into a nightmare. Rainey lives in Gordon Plaza, a black residential neighborhood built on the site of a former landfill containing garbage, animal carcasses, rats, and more than 49 cancer-causing chemicals. Known as the Agricultural Street Landfill, it had been closed up until the early 1980s, when developers began building affordable housing there. First came the Press Park development, then the Gordon Plaza neighborhood and elementary school. Soon residents began finding debris in their yards and smelling odors inside the homes. And many were suffering from major health problems, including cancer. When children tested positive for lead in their blood, and the soil itself was declared toxic, the elementary school was forced to close. The Environmental Protection Agency later declared the area a Superfund site, recognized as one of the most contaminated communities in the nation. After Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans in 2005, the city's poor and middle-class black families struggled to recover. Gordon Plaza residents now had to focus on rebuilding what was left of their homes, the same homes that had been built on contaminated land. Many residents were locked out of receiving federal aid post-Katrina because of their neighborhood status as a toxic area. Rainey overcame many obstacles to return to her home. She believed the challenges were all part of a greater purpose. God awarded me my house, she explains, so I would ask God for the funds to get this house back together. Miraculously, she was able to rebuild her home, but this blessing came with a moral responsibility to help her neighbors. When Rainey heard about a meeting to discuss the city's upcoming budget plan, she felt compelled to attend and demand that it address the injustices committed against the black families of Gordon Plaza. Subsequently, Rainey and fellow residents filed a class action lawsuit in civil court, which resulted in New Orleans, its housing authority, the Orleans Parish School Board, and insurers of the housing authority being ordered to reimburse the residents for emotional stress and property damage. Students were also supposed to be paid for each year they attended the elementary school on toxic land, but they never received reimbursement for their physical ailments. In 2015, a judge ordered the Housing Authority of New Orleans insurers to pay $14.2 million to residents hurt by living in the development. However, after lawyer fees and administrative expenses, each resident received only a few thousand dollars, according to reports. Rainey had every reason to become discouraged and give up, but she felt she had a divine assignment to help her community. As the president of residents of Gordon Plaza Incorporated, she convenes gatherings with folks in her home, attends city council meetings, organizes rallies, and advocates day in and day out for her neighborhood. She points out that what has been done to them has been perpetuated against Black communities across the nation, from the water crisis in Flint to air pollution in New York City. In defending her community, Rainey says she is representing all Black communities plagued by environmental racism. She is standing up for the lives lost to the site's toxicity, as well as for the residents who are still being poisoned and those who may be affected in the future. Most Gordon Plaza homeowners do not have the luxury of just selling their homes and moving somewhere else. Who is going to purchase a house built on unhealthy land? This is why Rainey has taken the future of her community into her own hands, confronting and demanding justice from the entities that allowed this injury to occur in the first place. She has kept up the fight for 3 decades and through 6 mayoral administrations and has no plans to slow down. Indeed, during a federal hearing last March, she led a contingent of her neighbors in calling for a fully funded relocation from the land that has been poisoning their bodies. We have paid abundant tax dollars for the toxic soil that we live on, she says. We are certain the city has or can acquire the funds for our relocation. We just need them to choose to do what's right. Moving on to, well, continuing on with issues. 2020 presidential roundup. It's far too early to predict the outcome of 2020 election. But one thing is clear, the field is crowded. More than 24 candidates are vying to oust President Donald Trump and become the 46th president of the United States, following a groundswell of political activism across the country that put record number of women and people of color in office after the November 2018 midterms. The coming election will be more pivotal than ever. Here are some of the candidates we're keeping an eye on, including a few who are among the top contenders for your all-important vote. The rising star, Kamala Harris, is reigniting Shirley Chisholm's legacy. Harris, age 54, only the second Black woman in history to be elected to the U.S. Senate. And if she has her way, the Oakland native, whose father is Jamaican and whose late mother hailed from India, will make history as America's first Black Indian American woman president as well. Harris's platform includes debt-free college, Medicare for all, protecting immigrants' rights, and providing monthly cash stipends of up to $500 to help families make ends meet. As California's first woman attorney general, Harris counters critics of her law enforcement background by noting her fight for criminal justice and bail reform. Meanwhile, the senator frequently blasts the policies of the Trump administration. This president isn't trying to make America great. He's trying to make America hate, she told an NAACP gathering. So it is critical to our security, our dignity, and our unity as a nation when I say we need a new president. The independent, Bernie Sanders, doesn't give up easily. Sanders is serving his third term representing Vermont in the U.S. Senate after winning re-election in 2018. His previous 16 years in the House of Representatives make him the longest serving independent member of Congress in American history. Sanders, age 77, is a Brooklyn native who gained national prominence while running for president in 2016. His 2020 campaign revolves around his core values as a self-described democratic socialist. He favors universal health care and free public college, and he supports veterans, the LGBT community, and the disabled. The senator has also vowed to root out institutional racism wherever it exists. John Delaney. Delaney's blue-collar roots have fueled his presidential aspirations. His father's union job helped put the New Jersey native through Columbia University. After graduating from Georgetown University Law Center, the lawyer and entrepreneur was named one of Fortune magazine's World's 50 Greatest Leaders in 2017. A former congressman representing Maryland, the 56-year-old supports the veterans' needs, public education, and universal pre-kindergarten jobs for economically struggling communities and combating the opioid epidemic. He also favors universal health care and aims to provide more mental health resources. On his campaign website, he vows to pay attention to Black America. Peter Buttigieg. Buttigieg, the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana, would be the youngest POTUS in history if elected. A Harvard grad and Rhodes Scholar, he served in the U.S. Navy Reserve and was deployed to Afghanistan. His presidential platform focuses on ensuring that America's future will be better than its past. On his campaign website, Buttigieg notes that we need to secure a future in which every American has the freedom to live a life of their choosing, where our republic grows more and not less democratic, where racial justice is a reality and not a dream. Bill Weld. Weld is a former Republican governor of Massachusetts who served two terms in the 90s. In 2016, he ran as a Libertarian Party candidate for vice president. A Harvard-trained lawyer and Oxford alum, the 73-year-old served in President Reagan's Justice Department as an assistant U.S. Attorney General and is currently a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. A Politico profile noted that Weld is pro-choice, supports LGBTQ rights, believes in climate change, and would challenge Donald Trump's immigration policies. On his website, Weld cites this recent report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller and says he would have pursued an indictment of the president for obstruction of justice. Julian Castro. The son of a single mother and the grandson of a grandmother who did domestic work after migrating from Mexico. Castro, age 44, wants to become America's first Latino president. After earning his undergraduate degree from Stanford and a law degree from Harvard, Castro was elected mayor of San Antonio and later served as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, also known as HUD, during the Obama administration. On the campaign trail, Castro talks about early childhood education, free college, universal health care, and green jobs. He supports LGBTQ rights and gun law reform. In his People First immigration policy, he outlines an inclusive roadmap to citizenship for undocumented individuals and families. John Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper, age 67, is a geologist, an entrepreneur, and the former mayor of Denver and governor of Colorado. He champions issues such as universal pre-K, job growth, climate change, and affordable health care. In Colorado, he expanded Medicaid and opened a state health insurance exchange program. Beto O'Rourke. O'Rourke, age 46, kicked off his campaign in his hometown of El Paso, Texas. The former congressman from 2013 to 2019 and one-time Senate candidate shared his goal of bridging divides and bringing Americans together. His platform focuses on such issues as climate change, criminal justice reform, access to health care, legalizing marijuana, immigration reform, and an economy that works for all. We must first ask how the world's wealthiest, most powerful country has found itself in such a perilous position, he said, when launching his candidacy. Tim Ryan. Ryan is age 45, has described himself as an independent, no-nonsense lawmaker. He served in Ohio State Senate before being elected to Congress in 2002. A lifelong Rust Belt resident, he believes the American dream has fallen too far out of reach. His platform supports affordable health care, education, and rebuilding the economy by investing in American workers. Tulsi Gabbard, age 38, broke ground in 2012 as the first Hindu elected to Congress. Now the Iraq veteran hopes to further shatter barriers by ascending to the highest office in the land. Polynesian and Caucasian, Gabbard was born in American Samoa and her family moved to Hawaii. When she was a toddler, the Hawaii Pacific University grad who served in local, state, and federal offices champions women's and veterans' rights, environmental causes, criminal justice reform, affordable housing, and net neutrality. The New York Times says she has apologized for previous anti-gay statements. Wayne Messam. If Messam gets his wish, America will see another black man occupy the Oval Office. The son of Jamaican immigrants, the 45-year-old Florida native is the mayor of Miramar and an entrepreneur. He and his wife, Angela, have built an award-winning construction firm. Messam's presidential platform centers on tackling gun violence, climate change, rising health care costs, and student loan debt. The progressive Elizabeth Warren is gaining ground. Hailing from modest Oklahoma roots, Warren became a teacher, law professor, and U.S. senator representing Massachusetts in 2013. Amid the 2008 crisis, Warren chaired the Congressional Oversight Panel, holding Wall Street accountable, while advising then-President Barack Obama. She's widely credited with establishing the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. More recently, she has pushed for improving maternal health outcomes for black women. Her presidential platform includes ending corruption in Washington, revising campaign finance laws, and developing a foreign policy that favors fair trade and issues war. She also wants to rebuild the middle class and tackle student loan debt. If you work hard and play by the rules, says the 70-year-old mother and grandmother, you ought to be able to take care of yourself and the people you love. And we're going to stop right here because it looks like that we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.triangleradioreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.